You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Warriors Off Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by sports columnist Scott Ostler and Bruce Jenkins. On Thursday morning, we sat down at the Chronicles headquarters on Mission Street to preview what should be an intriguing training camp. We'll have our conversation right after the break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Bruce and Scott, I really appreciate you guys joining me. This is my first podcast back from what I call my annual summer sabbatical, where I'm off for a good, you know, 8-week chunk, traveling around and getting rejuvenated. So I'm eager to be back in the studio, and I'm happy to have you guys with me, two of my favorite coworkers and columnists, some of the best out there. We're coming up on Media Day, so it's approaching. Media Day is this coming Monday, so the off season is officially ending. And this is a training camp that I'm honestly more excited about than I've ever been any training camp since I've been on the beat. This will be my fourth year on the beat. And there's so many more questions facing this team than there have been really in the past 5-6 years. There's a lot of mystery, a lot of intrigue, a lot of new players, 8 new players, even changes to the staff. And obviously, expectations aren't as high. The Warriors aren't necessarily supposed to win the NBA title this year. But just from a reporting perspective, I'm borderline just giddy to dig into all the new storylines and new players. From your perspective, does it make it even more exciting when you have all this intrigue and newness? Or the fact that they're not as good, does that take some of the intrigue away in your mind?
I think it's way more interesting. I kind of reached a point last year. I don't know if I was jaded, but there was a certain sameness to the way this whole thing was going. And, you know, the regular season was a bit of a drag because you knew they're going to be there. Are they going to, you know, are they relaxing here? You know, how motivated are they? And boy, this year, I'll tell you, especially Curry and Draymond, these guys are going to be motivated like crazy to show that they're still the Warriors, they're still relevant. And I think that's great. And like you say, I mean, all these new guys, who's going to play the small forward? However, is Poole going to work out? And Pascal, you always get the new guys. But this year, these guys can really play a role. Spellman could be interesting. Who knows? So just all of that, I think, is really refreshing.
Yeah, doing a quick step back. And by the way, you folks who are listening, you can't see us, but Connor is back from his vacation. He's not totally back because he's sitting here in shorts. And a shirt. I think he's going to hit the beach right after this.
He's
God
got a
bless
camp
him.
Winnemucca hat.
I was in Maui a couple weeks ago. I'm still trying to live those island vibes.
Still trying to – got the Nelly hangover, I think.
Yeah. But, I'm just glad you got 2 months off. That is very cool. And yeah. In these days of tightening everything up, you deserve that in a huge way.
Yeah. And on the subject of Connor and Bruce mentioning the excitement and the interest in training camp, I'm just thinking, stepping back, I've been in the Bay Area 27 years now, I think, at the Chronicle. And, wow. Of course, there was about 20 of those years when the Warriors, nobody cared about them because they weren't any good. But in that entire span, I don't think there's been a training camp, certainly not a media day, a training camp that is this interesting and entertaining and full of, as Connor said, mystery and everything. This is the best. This is going to be the most newsy, interesting, can't-miss training camp since I've been up here.
I also find it refreshing that Durant is not here. Lord knows the guy's the best player in the world, and once the game starts, man, watch out. He's phenomenal,
yeah.
And I wish him the best. But all the drama and, you know, what's going to happen and his indifference toward it all and the social media stuff. Frank Isola wrote about that in The Athletic the other day, calling, here comes the soap opera to our town. And I do wish him well, but I don't think anybody's going to miss all that.
I've had a lot of conversations this summer with other writers, people on the beat, and that's kind of the collective mood in the media core is just one of relief that Kevin Durant is gone. And the reality is I'm going to look back on that experience being able to cover one of the greatest players of all time.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to cherish it. And it was there were a lot of cool moments. Felt like I got to really witness history in a lot of ways. But the truth is toward the end of last season, really come January, February, once all the rumors are swirling about the Knicks and what have you, it was just so awkward, uncomfortable. He really set the tone for that entire locker room. He was sullen, moody, unhappy, obviously didn't like the media. And it really trickled down to that, I thought, the rest of the guys, and at times affected their play. And I tell people all the time, you know, this is a unique job in a lot of ways, but it's just like any other work environment. You know, if one of the leaders at your place of work is sullen and unhappy, it's going to affect the rest of the mood in that work environment. And I think everyone is kind of relieved in a lot of ways that he is gone. And even though they might not be as talented as last season, if you talk to Steph Curry and Draymond and Klay Thompson, they're as excited about the season as any, because it's so new and it's just so much freshness.
There's definitely going to be a more one-for-all mentality. And, yeah, like you say, and it's amazing to me that Durant couldn't find happiness on one of the best teams ever, living in the Bay Area with an understanding media. You know, it's not like we were pressing him and the questions were so innocuous that he went off on, where it was amazing to me. And I won't say he's in for a rude awakening in Brooklyn, because he's too smart to not know what's in store for him in New York with everything else. But it could be brutal. It really could.
Unfortunately,
he'll have the wanderlust again.
Unfortunately for Kevin, I think he's just one of those people who's always going to be searching for happiness and for some sort of fulfillment in his life. I think we've all met people who, for whatever reason, there's just some deep void inside of them. And no matter how much money they have, no matter what they have going on in their life, they're just deeply unhappy. And I think Kevin is unhappy. And I think that's a big reason why he went to Brooklyn. He came to Golden State searching for happiness, and then still wasn't fulfilled or happy after winning two Finals MVPs and two NBA titles. And so he thinks that playing with some close friends in Brooklyn might help him find that. And, you know, I hope he does. Just as someone who's gotten to know him a little bit, I hope he does. But like I said, I think the Warriors are moving forward.
I'll tell you who might be happy to move forward in that respect would be Steve Kerr, because I think Kerr sees coaching as a challenge, so he doesn't look at things like that as that he went through with Durant as a problem, and, oh my God, this is not fun. I think he relishes the challenge of doing stuff like that. But I think after a period of years, I don't think the two of them were ever completely in sync. I don't think Durant ever bought in totally to artistically or just the team vibe. And I think Kerr will be – I think he's going to feel positively about getting past that and getting with a group of guys who are basically 100% buying into his – philosophies, his weirdness, and also his schemes is on the court.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch him whenever he comes back to the court, even if it's next year. You know, playing with his close friends. You know, Kyrie he's got the best handle anybody's ever seen. He's phenomenal. He was on a title team, but you know, he wasn't the greatest presence with the Celtics last year. Said some of the most bizarre things I've ever heard. You know, he had hit after his fourth straight bad shooting night in the playoffs. He goes, "Well, nobody cares. Well, except how about everybody in Boston? For God's sake.
How about your teammates?"
Yeah. And you know, DeAndre Jordan's a big – is Kevin Durant going to press for him over Jared Allen, you know, because he's a friend of Jordan? I mean, all these things. The fact is the standings are going to tell him something, and that is that Kevin Durant isn't so great that he can lift that team to greatness. I don't see it happening, barring more drastic changes in their roster.
So as I alluded to earlier, there's so many different questions hanging over this team that we can dig into, but I'll just start here. There's eight newcomers to the roster, and the reality is for the Warriors to contend and I'm not saying even win a title, but contend for a title. The Warriors need at least a couple of those guys to really exceed expectations. You know, none of those guys outside of D'Angelo Russell come with a ton of acclaim. And they need the Willie Cauley-Steins, the Amari Spellmans of the world to be better than advertised, just from a depth standpoint, especially from a defensive standpoint, which there are a ton of question marks with Clay injured and Andre Iguodala gone. So my question for you guys is, of the eight newcomers, who are you most intrigued by and why?
Oh, I think probably Willie Cauley-Stein, because if he really comes to life, he kind of lost faith in the Kings as they had lost a little bit of faith in him, and so did the fans. It got really sour for him. But this is a super talented guy who can run the floor. He can really do just about anything you would ask of him if he's motivated. And if he does that, and they can, you know, come in with Looney late in the game as a big, that's going to be huge. I'd say he's probably the most interesting. And like most of these guys, you know, unlike Durant, Cauley-Stein comes to the Warriors and goes, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Look who I'm playing with. Look at the history. Look at how great the franchise has run. So, but I'd put him at the top, I think.
I got the opportunity last month to go to Kansas with Willie Cauley-Stein. He's from a small town in western Kansas called Spearville. Very isolated town that's so small that there are less than 800 residents have to drive 20 minutes into a neighboring town just to buy groceries or go to a movie or eat at a chain restaurant. And I got to spend an evening with him, and I have a story that I'm excited about dropping here hopefully in the next week or so, detailing that experience and getting at his story. But one of my big takeaways from that evening with him was just how eager and excited he is for this new opportunity, for this new chapter with the Warriors. As you alluded to, he was unhappy in his 4 years with Sacramento. I asked him what I felt was a pretty innocuous question about Sacramento, and he went on a 10-minute rant about everything, every problem he had there, and how he felt scapegoated and he wasn't utilized properly. And he's just excited to be in a functional winning environment, and he said that he can already feel the difference. And so I think you're going to see a guy who has a lot of natural ability, who hasn't even come close to tapping into it. And I actually think he can be better than a lot of people think. And honestly, he's extremely important to what the Warriors are going to do this year. I mean, he's almost definitely going to be their starting center. He's going to need to be a factor both offensively and defensively and shoulder a pretty heavy load, because there's a lot of questions about that front guard. You still have Kevon Looney, but Omari Spellman's got the weight issue. Alan Smilagic is super young, probably not ready to play. Eric Pascal's really a four or maybe even a three. He's not much of a center type. So he's going to need to do his part for the Warriors to be in contention.
Real quick, what do you hear about Spellman's weight right now?
I heard that he showed up at offseason workouts in better shape. It's still a work in progress, though. I don't have an exact number. I know he got up to...
So 410 was inaccurate.
He got up to like 296 mid-season last year, which is really the big reason why Atlanta cut ties with him.
Yeah.
But he's a guy who's talented, and I'm working on a story on him as well.
There you go.
About his weight issues, and it's been a lifelong struggle for him. So if he can figure out the weight issues, I actually think he can be a really solid backup big. I thought he was an upgrade from Damian Jones.
Yeah, Connor, you might want to pace yourself. You're going to have the story of the whole team laid out before the season even starts. But
the thing, like we were saying, though, I think every night or every week there's going to be something fresh about this team that's, okay, look at this now. Well, how's this going to affect them? This is great, or maybe this isn't so great. But it's going to be ongoing, you know, which as opposed to the relative – I wouldn't say it was monotonous, but
I was running out of things to write, I'll be honest. I mean,
yeah,
because there was such little roster turnover for 3-4 years there, where it's like, okay, what new can I say about Steph? What new can I say about Draymond that I haven't written before?
And Rocco would never talk. So
it was getting more and more challenging. So I'm it's a nice reprieve to have other people to write about.
Yeah. Oh, and in terms of my most interesting guy that I'm want to see how he works out at D'Angelo. I'm going to go with D'Angelo Russell because it's kind of simplistic to say he's got to play well. But he's going to have to be Klay Thompson for 3 months or something like that. But he's a scorer, and scorers sometimes have the mentality, kind of like a wide receiver mentality. I'm not saying Antonio Brown, but they're a little bit crazy, and they're very egotistical. They can be as a group, guys who can score, have that talent. And he doesn't seem to have that, from what I've seen. He seems to be ready to buy completely into the team concept, which could fit in beautifully. And you got to score, man. They still keep scoring the games. You can have all the teamwork guys who can set picks. You got to score the basketball.
And eat the dinner while you're at it.
Do you remember when we did the All-Star Draft podcast, and both of us were kind of giving D'Angelo Russell a hard time, like, oh, this guy's an All-Star. But, hey, you know, the guy had a good year.
He did.
With the Nets. I think he was deserving to get that All-Star nod. And I personally think he's going to be a better fit with the Warriors than a lot of people think. People are saying, hey, he's an ISO guy. He's a pick-and-roll guy. Warriors aren't an ISO team. Well, they're going to maybe have to become one. And the truth is, the Warriors wanted Willie Cauley-Stein largely for his pick-and-roll abilities. Mm. And so what you're going to see a lot is you're going to see – Willie Cauley-Stein and D'Angelo Russell kind of leading that second unit. They're going to stagger the minutes in such a way where the pick and roll game between Russell and Willie Cauley-Stein is a centerpiece of the offense when Draymond and Steph are sitting. So that's going to be really fascinating. I think D'Angelo Russell, he can actually play off the ball, even though he didn't really have to in Brooklyn. He's a really good spot up shooter. So that and this is also a guy who's spent his entire adult life idolizing Steph Curry. So I think he's going to do whatever he can to make that partnership work.
Yeah. Do you think in the Warriors' perfect world, Klay comes back strong, looking better than ever, and they trade D'Angelo for a wing, which is what a lot of people suspected they did from the beginning, or are they willing to let it play out and maybe make him a permanent or long-term?
They're from everyone I've talked to in the organization, plan A is for this to be a long-term thing. And they can play, you know, as you know, the NBA, your position is largely dependent on who you're guarding. And that's not an issue, really, because Klay Thompson can guard small forwards or really anyone he needs to guard outside of maybe centers. I think that they can make it work, and they're confident that they can make it work. I think when they did the sign and trade for Russell and there was all that chatter, oh, they just got him for a trade piece, I think that was overblown. Mm-hmm. That's their backup plan, but they want this to work. And I think if you look at the timing of everything, Klay might not come back until right around the trade deadline anyway. Mm-hmm. So they're going to want to see how that works before they look into trading D'Angelo Russell. Sure. So so the odds of him getting traded this season seem minimal to me. But in terms of guys I'm most excited about, you guys honestly hit on both of them. Willie Cauley-Stein in particular is someone I'm fascinated by. But one name I'll throw out there is Eric Pascal. He was actually their last draft pick in the draft at 41, a guy who played 4 years of college, won national championship at Villanova, comes in with a pedigree and an experience level that not a lot of rookies these days come in with. And I think he's a guy that is going to need to step into a real vital rotation role right away. If you just look at this depth chart, I mean, he's got to be probably – he or Amari Spellman need to be the backup four. I think he's in some ways more ready right now. I was impressed by what he did at Summer League. He wasn't – he's not going to wow you with anything he does, but he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He's in the right places. He can shoot, you know, the mid-range out to three-point. He's strong physically. So they need – which it's not very often that the Warriors or really any NBA team says to a 41st pick rookie, you need to come in and play significant minutes. But that's the case with him. And then a couple other guys just that I'll mention here, Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson III. Those guys might be their – one of those guys might be the Warriors starting small forward while Klay is out. Either them or Alphonso McKinney. Glenn Robinson and Alec Burks are obviously coming off underwhelming seasons. Their careers have derailed, so this is an opportunity for them to resuscitate their careers. They have 3-and-D abilities, so it'll be fascinating to see if they can actually live up to that.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in Poole also. He's a real cocky kid, it's sort of like Nick Young, but not nearly that off the rails. He's a lot more measured, I think, but he really believes in himself, and he's got a nice way about him. He's done some cool videos in the summer, and he's got a beautiful stroke. And you know, if you come on a team with Curry, you'd better be able to shoot that. You know, and Nick Young did that for the most part. But this guy, I think, has got a lot more to offer. I think he'll be interesting, obviously not as a mainstay and a guy they're totally depending on, but it'd be interesting to see what he does coming off the bench.
Yeah, I personally still think he's a year or two away from being able to contribute. I would not be surprised if he spent some time in Santa Cruz this season. I thought that was a reach where they took him at 28. I understand why they did it. They just really felt like they needed a shooter off the bench at that wing position, and he was kind of the best available.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm a little skeptical on whether or not he's really an NBA player. I mean, his one thing that he's good at is shooting the three, and he's not an elite three-point shooter.
He's
solid, but he's not, you know, elite by any
Who's the guy that Boston drafted that the Warriors could have had but didn't at that position?
Wasn't that Dylan Edwards?
Or?
I'm forgetting his name.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of Carson Edwards?
Carson Edwards.
From what I heard, it wasn't
not exactly a fit, a match. But
it wasn't Carson Edwards that they were targeting. It was I'm going to look up his name. I'm forgetting his name. The guy out of Belmont, Dylan.
Ian Clark Country.
Let me check his name real quick.
Yeah.
Dylan Carson, Windler, who's now with the Cavs. He was a late first round pick who went just a few spots before the Warriors were drafting, and they, from what I had heard, were seriously interested in him, and he fit exactly what they're looking for, you know, a big wing who can shoot, and, you know, he went at 26, two spots before, so they kind of went down.
I'm just saying they did have a shot at Edwards and didn't do it, and that, he might not be anywhere close.
There's so many Carson Edwards types who flame out, a guy who's a shooting guard in a point guard's body.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't use a first-round pick on a guy like that, especially when the Warriors actually need that guy to maybe contribute at some point soon. So there's a lot to dig in here. One question I have for you guys is, what do you think about what Steve Kerr is facing? It feels like his entire job description is changing. His first 5 years with Golden State, his job was largely about managing egos and figuring out the locker room dynamic and getting everyone to play with joy and play his style of play. And now it's really more about player development. You've seen them really bolster their player development staff this summer, adding 3 new guys to that staff, one of whom was Aaron Miles, the head coach in Santa Cruz. And so it's player development. It's figuring out how to get a team that on paper doesn't look very good defensively to buy in defensively.
Yeah.
It's getting that bench to exceed expectations, because the bench is going to need to be better than people think. So what do you think about what he faces, and do you think he's up for the challenge?
Well, for me, it's two things. I mean, the defense is going to be huge for Kerr and Ron Adams. I mean, Clay is one of the best. You lose Durant, and Iguodala is a huge, huge loss, which Kerr was pretty frank about how big of a loss that is. So you lose 3. You know, Durant could play fierce defense when he wanted to. Maintaining that defensive intensity that started with Mark Jackson and was a huge part of everything they've ever done here. I don't know how they're going to do it, but that'll be big. And the other thing is, I think he needs to maintain the basic offensive mentality, even with a whole different group, even with thoughts about pick and roll, because that's the essence of this team. That's the essence of any great team is fantastic ball movement. And, you know, Durant came out and said that it only works to some point. You know, it's true, and Kerr diplomatically said he's right, but it always slows down in the playoffs, whether it's a Magic Lakers or Walt Frazier and the Knicks or San Antonio or all the way back to, you know, Sam Jones and Havlicek. It always comes down to who's your guy at the end. You know, this is a sound offense. It's the best offense we've seen, certainly in history, one of the best. And, you know, Durant, of course, you know, demeaned it because he's Kevin Durant. But I think they need to maintain that spirit of unselfishness, a better pass, always looking out for the next guy and keep the ball moving.
Yeah, I think Kerr is really looking forward to this season in a lot of ways because he has said he wanted to coach for the long haul. He's talked about maybe 10 years or something like that. So it's clear that he is not just, let's milk Steph and Clay and those guys for what they get, and then I'll get the hell out of here with my golden record. I think he sees himself more as a real coach, you know, working through problems and challenges and stuff like that. And he's going to have a load of them this season. And I think he sees this as a chance to kind of exercise his creativity and his coaching ability. So if they get on and off the court,
if they get to the playoffs and get a couple rounds deep, you know, his reputation, which is already, he's going to just go through the roof.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously always faced that criticism of, is he really a coach? I mean, can he really coach? What is his X's and O's? What's his player development? Is he just a guy who's there to ease egos and get guys to be friendly with each other?
Yeah. But isn't
I've always said I don't think he is necessarily the world's greatest in-game tactician, and he'll even tell you that. But he is a phenomenal offensive mind, and I think he has an incredible ability to relate to any type of player, which is probably his greatest skill as a coach. He can make anyone comfortable. He can make anyone feel like they belong, and that's going to be incredibly valuable as he tries to integrate 8 newcomers into this roster.
Yeah, I personally don't think he's trying to live down that or get beyond that thing of, oh, he's just coach of the great team. Obviously, I think he realizes that people in basketball, not even players, but other coaches and stuff, realize he's done a pretty damn good job, and it's not just about making sure Kevin shows up to work every day and all that stuff. But so I think he's secure in that. I think he wants to advance himself as a coach.
You talk about being secure. This is a lifetime bench guy who, when it came down to that big playoff game in Chicago against Utah, went do or die shot. He's on the bench and telling Michael Jordan, you know, I'm there if you need me. If you double time, I'm going to be there. I mean, this is Steve Kerr. And he was there, and he hit the shot, for God's sake.
Right.
But that's what his comfort level, because he was a shooter and he knew he was.
Yeah.
And when he first came in as a coach, he didn't have that comfort level, and he told me that he, like a month before training camp, he was sweating every night thinking, oh, my God, I have these great schemes and everything. If it doesn't work, I'm going to be here about 10 minutes and they're going to fire me. Now he's beyond that, and I think he's at the point he was as a shooter. As a coach, he's like he was with Jordan. He's now saying, give me the ball. I can handle it.
Very cool.
Now, and so one thing I wanted to touch on is we actually, myself and Carlos Gonzalez, our photographer, got a chance to tour the locker room, the performance center, earlier this week. I know that media had gotten a chance to look at it earlier, but this was the first time it was officially unveiled where we could actually take photos and video. And so we actually have a virtual tour of the performance center on our website at SF Chronicle that you should go check out. Some of the things that really stood out to me there, well, first of all, the locker room itself is incredible. It's a circular design, and the ceiling is a replica of the ceiling at Oracle Arena, which I thought was a really cool way to kind of bring the history. And in the center of the locker room, they have a repurposed part of the 2015 championship court, which Draymond Green has already declared only players who've won a championship are allowed to stand on there.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was pretty cool stuff. But some of the other stuff that stood out to me, there's a barber shop. They're going to be bringing in barbers to get fades and haircuts before games, which I thought was pretty
cool. Barber Seville is going to be there.
They have a two-court in-arena practice facility, which I've never seen before. Just to have an in-arena practice facility is awesome, but no other team in the NBA has two courts. That requires an incredible amount of space and money, which the Warriors are obviously sparing no expense. And so that was awesome. And then one thing that stood out to me was they have something called a mindfulness room, which was Rick Celebrini's idea. Rick Celebrini, their head trainer. And it has a sleep pod. It has different activities to help you relax and train your mind before a game, kind of going along with just their whole goal to really work on mental health. So
where was that when Durant was here?
Right, right. If anyone needed it, it was Kevin Durant. I don't know if he would have used it though. That's the issue. So, yeah. it's going to be exciting to go to that arena every day, because honestly, I know you have, Bruce, but Scott, have you gotten the chance to go yet?
Yeah, I've been there. I've been there about four times. So,
oh wow, okay,
another place pretty well.
Well, I've been on sabbatical, so I haven't been seeing everything you've done. But no, it's probably the nicest arena I've ever seen. Just all the design elements in the art, it's incredible. Yeah. So.
Have you seen the message board, or the video screen rather, in the center? Have you seen it lit up in action?
No.
Because I was in there once when they lit it up, and it is mind-blowing. I mean, they talk about Jerry Jones's thing down there in Texas, mm-hmm. and I haven't been down there. I guess that's spectacular. But it's probably four or five times bigger than the one at Oracle. Mm. It's huge, and it's ultra fantastic, high def. I can't imagine anybody going there unless you're sitting courtside. Nobody's going to be watching the game. They're just going to be sitting there watching the screen.
There's
so
many stats and little features that right. they put in there. I mean, if you're into the numbers, you might be not watching the game for minutes at a time.
But yeah,
yeah, it's very cool. They did a fantastic job. It's really kind of overwhelming.
Yeah. If you can afford to get in, God bless you.
Bruce, Scott, I really appreciate you joining me on the pod this week. It was awesome having you, and I look forward to next week. Stay locked and loaded, as always, at sfchronicle.com for all our coverage from Media Day and the first week of training camp. It should be a lot of fun.
Go put some pants on.
Welcome back.
I want to thank Scott Osler and Bruce Jenkins for joining me on the podcast. It was great picking their brains about the upcoming Warriors season.
Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @con_cron and email me at cleturno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.